is The Guardian.
I'm Noor Haider, coming to you from Gadigal land, and this is the full story.
These are the latest pictures that we're getting right now from Beirut southern suburb of Dahiya, where once again we understand that there has been an Israeli airstrike on the densely packed southern suburb.
On Sunday, Israel bombed Lebanon's capital, Beirut, hitting a residential building and killing five people while injuring 28 others. Amongst those killed in the strike was a senior Hezbollah official.
Haitham Tabatabe was chief of staff of the group's armed wing. At least four other Hezbollah fighters were also killed in the attack, and dozens of people were injured. Israel has repeatedly launched attacks on southern Lebanon, claiming Hezbollah is rearming.
It is the latest deadly attack on Lebanese territory by Israel, which has continued to hit the country despite a ceasefire signed 1 year ago. According to the United Nations, more than 120 civilians have been killed and border villages in the south have been devastated.
In Israeli media today, they were saying that Lebanon, not Gaza, is now the new flashpoint for Israel, and they're turning their attention to Lebanon again. That statement is incredibly worrying. And in Lebanon now, WhatsApp chats between families are dominated by people trying to read the tea leaves of what the Israelis are thinking.
Today, reporter William Christou on Israel's ceasefire breaches in Lebanon and how an attack on Beirut plunges the country deeper into the unknown. It's Wednesday, the 26th of November. Welcome to Full Story, William.
Thanks for having me.
Earlier this week, Israel bombed Lebanon's capital, Beirut. What do we know about that strike?
Yes, this was a unique strike for a number of reasons. The first is that this is the fifth strike on the southern suburbs of Beirut since the ceasefire took place in Lebanon almost a year ago. But this is the first time that a strike happened without warning. Typically, what happens is they will say, we're about to hit these buildings, everybody get out. And then 30 minutes, an hour later, they hit them. And now this strike, without warning, hit a residential apartment building, wounding more than 20 people and killing five.
William, as you've mentioned, a number of people were injured in that attack. Five people were killed, including a man by the name of Haitham Tabtabai. What do we know about him?
So he was the number two in Hezbollah and the head of the military staff. And he is part of the new generation of the organization's leaders. The 13-month war that was fought between Israel and Hezbollah, which ended last year, killed off most of Hezbollah's senior military cadre. And he was one of the people that was tapped to fill in for the people that were killed during the war. And now even he has been assassinated.
How has Hezbollah responded to this latest strike? Will it retaliate?
So what Hezbollah said is that this strike violates red lines. And there has been a lot of red lines over the past year which have been violated with seemingly no response. You know, the reality is there was a ceasefire agreement signed a year ago. And Israel has conducted over 1,000 strikes on Lebanese territory. Hezbollah conducted one strike last December, and what they said was a warning shot at Israel, but since then has been quiet. And the reality is that Hezbollah is in a really bad place. You know, the war has left them devastated. Like I said, most of their senior military cadre has been eliminated. Their political leadership, also a lot of the top people, including the famed commander Nasrallah, have been killed. So the group's been left reeling, and they don't have much capacity to respond at this moment.
Mm.
At the same time, they're under pressure from their base to do something because it's just been relentless killing of Hezbollah leaders since the ceasefire was signed.
Mm. There is a lot in that answer that I want to unpack, but has there been a response from the Lebanese government, from President Joseph Aoun?
The president said that they'd like the international community to intervene, and they've said this a number of times before. Similar to Hezbollah, that the president and the prime minister's hands are tied. They have very little ability to respond to Israel. And typically what happens when Israel carries out a particularly egregious strike on Lebanon is they make a complaint to the UN Security Council. The reality is there's no one in the region, and there's no one in the world that can stop Israel from conducting attacks on Lebanon besides the United States. And up until now, it seems uninterested in doing so.
Just days before this latest strike, there was another strike on a Palestinian refugee camp in the south of Lebanon at the Ain al-Hilwi refugee camp. Could you tell us about what happened there?
Yeah, that was a particularly brutal strike. Israel struck near a football field in the Ain al-Hilwi Palestinian refugee camp. 13 people were killed, and according to local officials, most of them were young men. According to Israel, they were all Hamas operatives. And this is just a part of a steady escalation that we're seeing. For nearly a year, we've seen daily strikes in the south. Oftentimes, they didn't kill people. Sometimes they killed one or two people. But in the past week, you know, we've seen a strike on this refugee camp, which killed a huge amount of people, one of the deadliest strikes we've seen in a long time. And then just days after, we saw an unannounced strike in the southern suburbs of Beirut. And this is a huge escalation. I mean, this is not the sort of thing we've seen since the war, the open war, was being fought between the two countries.
William, as you've mentioned, there have been near daily strikes by Israel on Lebanese soil since that ceasefire took place 1 year ago. I believe more than 120 civilians have been killed. How are those strikes affecting communities in the Jnoub in southern Lebanon?
In the south, life has not gone back to normal. People who have tried to rebuild their homes and their communities in the south, particularly close to the border, have found that airstrikes have been taking place against bulldozers that come to clear the rubble, or houses that have been built have been destroyed again. And if you live there, you live in fear of whether a drone hits you or it hits someone next to you, you could be caught in the crossfire. And there's been children that have been killed by accident as well. So in the south, there was a ceasefire signed, but in the south, it doesn't seem like it is at all. And then there's the country as well. I mean, we are just a few days away from the year anniversary of that ceasefire. And yet all the talk in Lebanon now is, are we heading into another war?
Mm.
And we hear the discussions that I thought would end with the war, whether or not it's going to happen, and reading the tea leaves. I mean, the Pope is supposed to come to Lebanon next week. And so what everyone's saying now is, oh, there's not going to be a war until he leaves, of course. So at least we have a week ahead of us. So now everyone in Lebanon is really feeling as if there might be another conflict in the country. And it's provoked a state of anxiety.
Mm. Under the ceasefire agreement, Israel was supposed to withdraw from Lebanon, but that hasn't happened. Israel continues to occupy parts of southern Lebanon. What kind of presence does it have?
So Israel continues to occupy 5 points in Lebanese territory. They've set up military outposts there. They have also recently started building walls within Lebanese territory, sectioning off parts of southern Lebanon. And of course, the Lebanese government has protested this, and they've asked that Israel, under the terms of the ceasefire agreement, leave. But Israel has seemingly been unwilling to cede this territory back to Lebanon. And all this has been done under the excuse that Hezbollah is rebuilding its capacities, and so they're violating the ceasefire agreement. So Israel is not going to give back these territories.
The United States has been pressuring Lebanon to disarm Hezbollah. You've previously said that that pushes Lebanon into a dangerous choice. Could you elaborate on that for us?
Yeah, I think when you look at the Lebanese government now, they're really in a bind. Because on the one hand, they want to disarm. They want to disarm Hezbollah, and they want to restore a monopoly of weapons within the state. And a lot has happened in the last year. You know, the idea of people talking openly about getting rid of Hezbollah's arms a year ago would have been unheard of. No one would have thought that that could have happened. For 20 years, Hezbollah was dominating the country. You know, they ran the government. They were a non-state group, but it was a non-state group that had superseded the state. So in that respect, you know, new discussions are happening, and, you know, a new political reality is emerging in Lebanon. At the same time, the government does not want to provoke the ire of Hezbollah, which is still, even though it's severely weakened, the strongest armed group in Lebanon, perhaps even stronger than the Lebanese army. You know, Lebanon has a long history of sectarian tension. It had a 15-year civil war from the 70s to the 90s, which saw the country split along sectarian lines. Communities and neighborhoods were fighting against each other. And the government is very keen not to repeat that scenario. So they don't want to estrange the Shia community, which makes up the base for Hezbollah. They want to make sure that they're building a state that's inclusive for the Shia, and that those people who support this armed group, Hezbollah, see a place in the state and so don't need to resort to paramilitary group.
We'll be right back. You recently revealed that Israel appears to have used banned cluster munitions in southern Lebanon during the war in 2024. I wonder if you could explain what cluster munitions are and their painful legacy in Lebanon.
Yeah, so in war, obviously, all weapons are destructive and painful and harmful. But cluster munitions in particular are quite harmful for civilians. And the reason for that is that cluster munitions, if you imagine them as a container, they're a container that open up in midair and they release from dozens to even hundreds of small bombs that blanket an area indiscriminately. And the issue with that, not only when they're released, but the issue is that these bombs oftentimes don't explode. They'll be left there for decades to come. And if civilians go and pick it up, oftentimes children do, they can be hurt. And Lebanon has a particular history with this. I mean, in the end of the 2006 war, Israel released 4 million cluster bombs over the south of the country, which has left a million unexploded bombs there.
Mm.
And so recently we saw pictures of remnants of new types of cluster munitions that Israel had used during the 13-month war with Lebanon. And this was surprising because Israel had not been known to have used cluster munitions since the 2006 war in Lebanon. And when they did back then, it produced global outrage. It produced condemnation even within Israel because of the harm that it was causing towards civilians. And it's part of the reason why a global compact was created to ban the use of cluster munitions. And so these new revelations have shown just how harmful that war was on Lebanon, because those remnants of war might be present even today.
William, for many Lebanese, both in Lebanon and abroad, there is a real uncertainty and a real fear about what lies ahead. You live and work in Lebanon. Just how precarious a time is it?
Yeah, it's very precarious, and it's a very anxious time. And again, like I said, this comes a year after the ceasefire was signed. Life is not supposed to look like this. There are not supposed to be daily airstrikes in the south. And there's not supposed to be a fear that war will erupt at any moment.
Mm.
In Israeli media today, they were saying that Lebanon, not Gaza, is now the new flashpoint for Israel. And they're turning their attention to Lebanon again. That statement is incredibly worrying. And in Lebanon now, WhatsApp chats between families are dominated by people trying to read the tea leaves of what the Israelis are thinking. And it's a dangerous situation because, okay, you have Israel bombing and pushing red lines, and until now, Hezbollah hasn't done anything.
Mm.
But we don't know at what point there might be a response triggered, and that could tip into war. As a Western diplomat told me the other day, is that during the 13-month war, one of the issues is that everybody overestimated the capacities of Hezbollah. At the end of the day, they were just... Israel wiped the floor with them. But these days, he said that people are underestimating the capacities of Hezbollah. So while it's a group that's been decimated and seems to be down and out, it still has the capacity to escalate. And we could have a very dangerous scenario similar to what we saw a year ago, where it was constant bombing, over a million displaced people. And at the end of the day, 4,000 people who died from a war in Lebanon.
William Christou, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
That was journalist William Christou. You can find more of his work on theguardian.com, and we've linked to his latest pieces on the Full Story page. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Karishma Luthria with additional production by Jessica O'Brien. Sound design and mixing by Joe Koning. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also leave us a review. I'm Noor Haidar. Catch you next time.